This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you are listening to Lynn on the Evening Edition, and it's time for our year-end wrap of the headlines when it comes to education. So with us in the studio are Harry Tan, who is the Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession, Datin Nor Azim Abdul Rahim, the Chairperson of the Parents Action Group for Education, or PAGE Malaysia, and also Chan Sun Sing, Program Director at Teach for Malaysia. So we have a full studio. Thank you all so much for joining us this evening. One of the significant changes, I think, that has caught everyone's attention this year was the scrapping of exams for years 1 to 3, which was replaced instead by classroom-based assessments. Has this changed things significantly for schools?
All right. This is what our education minister aspires to get his message across, that everything is important: academic, co-academic, co-curricular, emotional, physical development. All are important. And we as teachers, we feel that this all contributes to wholesome education. A's are important, but it is not at the end of the world if the student does not achieve it.
Datin Azima, your thoughts?
I quite like the idea because before, teachers would teach the test. They were so focused on finishing the syllabus and not really, I suppose, caring whether there was any learning in the first place. So this is good because it gives students time to reflect and think, critically think, which is important. And actually, scrapping exams is actually not exactly right because it's they're still keeping the formative exams, which is the term exams. They're just doing away with the end of the year. So it's good that we are moving away from that stress that teachers and students have to go through at the end.
Yeah, I think that Datin Azima is absolutely correct in terms of we all know that our education system for the longest time has been extremely exam-oriented. And I think, to be fair, to give teachers want to do their best according to the ways in which they're measured, right? And by institutionalizing exams across every single year, they're going to work towards those things. And I think that by removing the exams across year 1 to 3, that's beneficial on a number of fronts. For students, they don't have that pressure of thinking that the purpose of school or the purpose of learning is to do well on their exams, right? So by just totally taking that away, I think that that helps. The challenge that we will see, I think that the question is around, like, has this worked so far, right? And I think that it will take time for us to see that actually make a difference. And I think that you imagine that you've been teaching a certain way for years, and now you're expected to remove examinations, which have been the anchor of the way in which you've teach, you've taught for your entire career. That shift to make classroom-based assessments versus examinations, the form of assessment, that shift is going to take time. And what we see now is that there are a range. So there are definitely still teachers that struggle with this. There are society. We don't necessarily understand what that looks like in practice and how to trust our teachers to be able to actually hold the authority to make those assessments.
If I may add, I think the society has the wrong perception of this exam thing. They are thinking that the students come this from year 1 to year 3, and they don't have to sit for any sort of assessment. So the parents are worried that they are not able to see the child's development. That's wrong. What we, the minister or the Ministry of Education has done is to scrape off the final year exams, the summative exams, which causes pressure on the students and also on the parents because they want to grade themselves against each other. They want to be in the better class or those not performing will go to the end classes and so on and so forth. So at the end of the day, the assessment is still there. Whether the students are able to write an essay, whether the students are able to spell correctly, the teachers are still carrying out quizzes, tests, formative tests to see whether they are weak in certain particular subjects so that the teachers can carry out remedial activities for the students. So that misconception or that thing that is perceived by the public as the teachers not able to give a right report about their children's progress is wrong.
So, you know, another major change that kind of took place this year was an announcement from the Education Ministry that next year schools are going streamless, or at least that's the initial understanding of that headline. But the MOE has said that subjects will be offered instead in packages. So, since we are now pretty much in 2020, more or less, do we know how that's going to work and how ready our schools and teachers are to make this change?
Okay, schools are actually not going streamless. I think the word that was used by the minister when he made this announcement in Germany was that the schools are going cross-streaming. So I've spoken to some teachers and principals, and this is what they say. They will continue status quo, actually, next year because they have no additional resources to add on anything else. So until you see teachers coming in with new subject knowledge or new labs being built, new materials, new resources, it's just going to be remain the same. The only good thing is that I suppose there's the opportunity to do subjects which you weren't probably able to before. But again, it's all subject to resources.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that even if you look at the circular that was sent by the Ministry of Education, essentially there's two main packages, which is the STEM package and then the arts and humanities, which kind of is similar to the idea of arts and sciences. In concept, I think that's a great idea. I think that anything that's going to provide a child more access to the choices that they want to have and the learning that they're passionate about, think is a great idea. I think in terms of implementation, you will see many challenges with that, like to what Dr. Nazima said. Do you even have the teachers to provide all of these, to provide all of these subjects to students? And in rural schools, you won't necessarily have that selection of teachers that's going to be able to provide that. I think that a reality is that school principals are measured based on their GPS, so the grades that they get at the end of the year. And something that is common that we've heard is that principals have at times chosen not to offer certain subjects because they know that the students aren't necessarily going to perform well in those subjects. So I think there's a lot to be said about implementation, but also the ways in which our schools are actually measured. So if examination grades continue to be the biggest thing that principals are held accountable towards, you're not necessarily going to see that principals are going to open up every subject that is available. But even if they were to do that, they might not necessarily have the resources to do that either.
So Harry, I mean, a couple of issues there, right? This idea of resources for teachers, as well as whether or not schools should continue to be benchmarked by examination scores alone. What are your thoughts?
All right. On this matter, we feel that this streamless concept is just a label. The teachers are still the same. The subjects offered in the school are still the same. It's just a mixture of the subjects that the students can choose. So in line with the ministry's concept of student-centered policies, therefore the students must be able to learn things that they want to learn. So in the previous system or in the previous packages, it's very divided. That means if you have science, it's science, and if you have arts, it's arts. So what about if a student wants to do accountancy, but at the same time, he wants also to keep in touch with some science subjects like physics and chemistry. So in certain schools, they offer that package, that package. But in others, maybe they say, okay, the principal says, no, we don't want to do this. We only have science and we only have arts. So the students are sort of restricted from making that particular choice. And also, what about if a student says, I want to do music, all right? So Do we have the teachers for them? Yes, the subjects or the particular subject is offered in certain schools. So the student has the liberty to go and seek out these schools in our country, and they can seek to and be enrolled in those schools. So the notion that the students or the teachers are all in a mess, they don't understand what this is all about, I think it's not true. When the students come back from school after their PT3 results, they are normally given 1 week of orientation. In that 1 week of orientation, the different individual subject teachers will come and tell the students, this is what you need to do if you want to take this particular subject. And then they have also the counselors who give them a briefing on what you need to take if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a lawyer, and things like that. So within that week, the students are given that opportunity to be exposed to the various talks. And then at the same time, because of the constraints of certain classes, maybe there are many students who want to go for a particular class. And the school, as in previous years, they will do sort of some meritocracy kind of sieving. And of course, the better students will be able to do certain subjects. All right.
We're speaking today with Harry Tan, who is the Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession, Datin Nur Azimah Abdul Rahim, the Chairperson of PAGE, or the Parents Action Group for Education, and Chan Sun Singh, who is the Program Director at Teach for Malaysia. And it is our roundup of 2019 in education. If you have any thoughts to share, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good evening. You are listening to Lynn on the Evening Edition, as well as my guests in the studio today, Harry Tan, Datin Nur Azimah Abdul Rahim, and Chan Sun Singh, all kind of taking on different elements of what this year has brought us in terms of developments in education. You know, we've been talking quite a bit about potential changes that might take place, things like examinations, things like streaming. And I just wanted to kind of inject another element into this, which is preparedness for IR 4.0. This is something that we've been talking about on and off throughout the year, this idea of whether or not schools are doing enough, whether or not our system is evolving enough. Right now, how would you assess how ready we are for IR 4.0?
Okay, IR 4.0 is basically about artificial intelligence. So what the Ministry of Education is doing is aligned with SDG, or Sustainable Goal Development Goals, whereby we are trying to teach our students higher order thinking skills. So when you have higher order thinking skills, then you are able to assess the situation and take means to overcome certain problems so that you can get on with life. And I feel that this alignment is appropriate and apt for our students to face future challenges.
Yeah, I think skills is absolutely the right term. And I think that when we shift to thinking about the future, we're essentially preparing our students for jobs that we don't even know exist, right? We have no idea what jobs are going to look like in 20 to 30 years. But what we do know is that a lot of the jobs that do exist are going to be automated, or they're going to just disappear, right? And so then the question is, what do we then need to do to prepare students for this? And I think that there's a couple of things about it, right? What are the thinking skills in order for a student to be able to create new value, right? How do they innovate, come up with new ideas, and how do we encourage that in our education system? I think, though, that there are also a couple of things that come in tandem with that. It's not just about the critical thinking skills, but actually, how do we then support teachers to be able to actually measure skills? How do we assess and develop skills in the classroom or in the school context is a big question, because we are so used to the idea of an assessment means you get an A on an examination, but actually, can you demonstrate skills in an examination? So then what needs to change about the way in which we assess, or the way in which we value the assessment of a child? So alongside those skills, there's critical thinking skills, there's all of these 21st century skills that the Ministry of Education is trying to ensure that comes across. Another big aspect is the idea of social-emotional learning, and how are we equipping our students to be able to interact with people, to be able to work in teams, to be able to work with one another, and to also just have the ability to understand themselves and to navigate the world. Because the world in which we're going to live in the future, or what IR 4.0 tells us, is that it's going to be, you know, that buzzword, the VUCA, so like the volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world. So how do we set kids up to be able to make sense of things and to think for themselves, but also to be able to navigate stress? How do they, when situations change for themselves, how are they able to cope with that and work with other people on that as well?
Not necessarily, but many equate IR 4.0 to TVET, actually, which we have decided that we should get into. I think it was an era that we were looking at, but decided not to go into it. And we realize now that this could be the start of getting the students in aligned with what to expect IR 4.0. So I think it has been some money put in for Tibet. And I think we're going in a big way to get the kids skilled for work.
Now, moving on to, I think, perhaps less happy things. There have been a couple of controversies this year, we know, where they came out and they really sort of dominated headlines for a good week at a time, for a good month at a time. And I'm thinking about things like the cat issue, the comic book incident, the matriculation quota. And I'm not necessarily going to ask you about each one of those things, but when something like this happens, what is the overall impact of these sorts of controversies on the world of education?
Well, it puts the education or educationalists in a bad light. It seems that the whole world is not, or the education world is not moving the right direction. So, and these are actually controversies to us, set up or put forth by politicians. So they have a field day trying to point out the weaknesses or point out the grievances of the public against all these particular items. So I feel that our education system is too politicized in this country. So we would like to appeal to let the professionals handle the education system without the interference of politicians.
The quota story is something that repeats itself every year, and there's no solution to it. The card issue, which eventually turned into a Jawi matter, I thought the timing was rather insensitive. Although we all know that Bahasa Melayu was written in Jawi in the first place before it became Romanized. But Jawi has always been, like Bahasa Arab, you know, the Arabic language, has always been linked to religion. So I think we can do without all this extra controversies, you know.
Mm. Yeah, I think largely my opinion would be that by politicizing and riling up controversy, I think it's actually quite a big distraction to what the Ministry of Education is actually trying to do in schools. But I think it's also a great picture of, to that point, of what do we need to do to be prepared for IR 4.0 in the 21st century, and the idea of how do we as a nation and as a society hold dialogue? How do we allow for critical thinking to arise, but not just be critical for the sake of being critical, but actually hold space for dialogue in which we can actually reconcile tensions? And I think oftentimes when we see these controversies arise, it shows us sort of our maturity as a society, but also it's an indication of how we as how our education system needs to prepare our students, our citizens, to be able to hold dialogue in a meaningful way.
We're speaking today about education, and education specifically in Malaysia in 2019, with Harry Tan, Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession, Datin Nur Azimah Abdul Rahim, the Chairperson of the Parents Action Group for Education, and Chan Sun Singh, who is the Program Director at Teach for Malaysia. If you have questions, comments, anything you'd like to hear more about, perhaps, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after this. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good evening. You're with Lynn on the Evening Edition and my full house of guests today. We have Harry Tan, Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession, Datin Nur Azimah Abdul Rahim, Chairperson for Page Malaysia, and Chan Sun Singh, Program Director at Teach for Malaysia. And in case you couldn't guess and in case you missed it earlier, we are talking today about education. Now, we've covered exams and streaming. We've talked about, in some ways, the controversies. Now, we also did see the Pasir Gudang crisis earlier this year, in which 111 schools had to close down temporarily. Many of those who were affected by this were school children. Is there any way that schools can better prepare for emergencies like this?
I suppose we have to look at the locations of all these schools, and where schools are within a certain radius of industrial, businesses. I think it's not just the Ministry of Education that needs to monitor these schools, but also the Department of Environment. And also maybe we should be looking at reviewing the SOPs for emergency situations, looking at what happened in the past. And I think we should be more prepared than we were the last time.
Yeah, absolutely. So Teach for Malaysia actually places in Pasir Gudang. So there were a number of our teachers and our students that were affected. And in response to that, a project that our teachers started there, they called it Project Kim Kim, which was the river which was polluted. And one of the things that they're working on is helping students and communities to think about, actually, this isn't a one-off incident, and there are many systemic factors that lead to it, right? So when we're asking what could schools do better, there are things that schools could do better, but that's not necessarily going to stop these incidents from happening again. And to Datin Azima's point, like the Department of the Environment needs to do stuff collectively, systemically. We need to address this. And I think that at the education level, yes, that we need to put in SOPs to be more effective in emergency situations, but how are we educating kids and our communities to think about the impacts on the environment, whether that's from basic pollution, like not throwing rubbish away, whether that's recycling, but what are the cause and effect and the systemic actions that we are contributing to as a society and that we need to analyze across all of the ministries and contributors and businesses, industry that makes this happen.
All right. We are truly sad as teachers, we are truly sad that this has happened. A school is supposed to be a safe haven, but in this particular case, students were hurt. Mm-hmm. We see the government is trying her best to get to the root of the problem and has initiated many policies to ensure the safety of our kids. But these problems are basically caused by greed and unscrupulous people who place profits before safety. Now, in all fairness, schools already have SOPs for fire. For example, they have fire drills. And if in these recent years, we have the haze problem. Mm-hmm. So if there is a particular threat to the student safety, the schools will be closed immediately. Yep. We also have SOPs in the science labs. And then if there is a flood, the students and the teachers, they know what to do. But to be fair, this is a new phenomenon caused by air pollution. And till today, they don't even know what is the root cause of this problem. So to be fair to them, the ministry, the schools, the administrators, the teachers have taken all possible steps to make sure that the students are safe. But unfortunately, there are some things that they can't trace the problem to. So we just have to be vigilant at all times.
Okay. Now, another development that we saw this year was inclusivity in schools. For example, the government introduced a zero reject policy to ensure that special needs students would be able to enroll. What are your observations for how that has actually worked out within the school system? Harry, maybe you could start us off.
Okay. The government has the zero reject policy, the Ministry of Education. We in the NUTP, we have the no one left behind belief. All right. The schools are always open to those in need of education. But at times, there are those who, the teachers have to follow set policies by the ministry. So sometimes we cannot admit people who are stateless, students who have not been going to schools for a certain period of time. Suddenly they want to come in, they just can't come in at year one. So they, based on their age, they have to come in at year 10. But with this new policy that the minister has set in place, the schools are now more flexible to be able to open their doors to these particular children. And with that, we find that we believe that education is a human right. And since the doors are open, so there definitely, hopefully, there will be no one left behind.
Definitely special needs has been given much more attention this year. Because they've been neglected. Even though there's a zero reject policy, they have been neglected in schools, for instance. First of all, teachers aren't educated, aren't taught and trained to teach special needs children. And in many cases, the kids are just lumped into a little room. And there are no facilities, there are no toilet facilities even. And in some cases, you know, OKU students are made to take the stairs on a daily basis. So I think this year, the unit within the ministry has really bulked up. And I think schools, you'll see significant changes made in schools next year, as far as special needs is concerned.
Maybe you guys could just kind of expand briefly on what it is that teachers need in terms of training for in dealing with special needs children. And I understand that, of course, it's very hard to give a blanket answer simply because special needs, there are many different forms of that. It's not as if everybody is the same. And so with that in mind, knowing that, then what are kind of the difficulties and the things that need to be put in place for teachers to be better equipped to deal with that?
Yeah, I think that first, I mean, like you said, there's so many special needs that need to be accounted for. And with each sort of special need, there's actually a lot of specialization and expertise that you need to develop to cater to that need. So I think alongside training, there needs to come the support that actually enables a teacher to deal with that. I think generally just more training around at a first stage, how do teachers identify? Like, how are they able to diagnose in their classroom whether there's a child that has dyslexia, for example? So general training that will help teachers to be able to identify some of those things. I think we also need to increase the number of teachers that are trained specifically for special ed. But then alongside that, what do teachers do? So once they're able to identify that, do they have someone that they can connect the child to? Can they call on someone who's going to be able to support them specifically for that child with that need in their classroom?
Okay. Of course, we have various kinds of children, special needs children, like those with learning disability, dyslexia, the deaf, the blind. So teachers, basically, they are trained to teach this particular group of students. But however, the problem lies with financing. You see, if the trained teacher is only trained, there's a minimum number of students that he or she must have. But then, if that particular area, there is no that student and no that particular teacher, then the student has to travel certain kilometers or go to a boarding school whereby these teachers are there. So that problem has to be addressed. But you can only address that problem when we have more money in the kitty.
Mm.
So that is a very touchy thing, yes.
I'm speaking today with Harry Tan, Secretary General of the NUTP, the National Union of the Teaching Profession, Datin Nur Azimah Abdul Rahim, Chairperson of the Parents Action Group for Education, or PAGE Malaysia, and Chan Sun Sing, Program Director at Teach for Malaysia. And we're talking, of course, about this year in education. You can WhatsApp your thoughts, 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back for the final part of this conversation. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Hello, everyone. You're with Lynn on the Evening Edition. And my guests today, we have Datin Nur Azimah Abdul Rahim, the chairperson of PAGE, the Parents Action Group for Education. We have Harry Tan, Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession, and Chan Sun Sing, Program Director at Teach for Malaysia, discussing the issues surrounding education in our country in 2019. Now, Let's touch briefly on this. There was an announcement this year for the free breakfast program in schools. The minister said that between 800 million ringgit and 1.67 billion ringgit is going to be spent on this initiative for primary schools next year. What are your thoughts on the announcements made so far and of this initiative overall?
It is important that children have breakfast before coming to school. In fact, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. But in reality, children, students rather, would rather have the extra 10 minutes of sleep than have breakfast. I think we all went through that.
Yes.
So, unless you have a mother who will sit by you and watch you eat breakfast and finish it, breakfast isn't going to happen for many children. So we hope that students will go to school and have that breakfast, that very important breakfast. Maybe it's more fun having breakfast among friends in school than having it at home. But there's also that portion of students who will not have breakfast no matter what. So I think I would like to see what's going to happen, what's going to take place on the first day of school. I'll be in school just to watch. And I suspect it will probably be a lot of fun having breakfast with your friends, say in the first month. But I think after that, it will probably dwindle. And if it dwindles, and I think we must ensure that there's no food wastage. So it's important that where we can save some funds and not just, cook and see it go to waste. I think it has to be monitored carefully and see there must be a cost and benefit analysis done in the end.
I think generally, so Teach for Malaysia typically places in high need schools where the majority of students in those schools come from B40 communities. And personally, when I was a teacher as well, I think you can see very clearly the impact of malnutrition with students. And many studies have shown the impact that it makes on actual learning by not having enough food. And, just starting off the day, coming to school hungry, you're not going to be sitting in school and concentrating on your lesson when you're thinking about, well, just being hungry, right? And so I think that in terms of serving the students that need it the most, I think that it's a great idea. And obviously there are studies as well that just measure sort of the impact of stigma of actually food programs which only cater to students from a certain background. And so I think the idea of providing breakfast for all students has benefit to it. But to what Dr. Nazima said, we do have to think about how are we utilizing our resources? How are we monitoring it? And how are we ensuring that the food is healthy, that it's actually going to address the malnutrition issues, and that it's going to be done in a way in which students feel inclusive, included, and that's beneficial for all of them.
All right. We already have the Rancangan Makanan Tambahan or the food aid program for the poor students. That, I think, already addresses the malnutrition problem. But I personally feel that breakfast is not about breakfast. It's not just about the food. It's about discipline. The students must sit together. They must make sure that they are on time. The teachers will be there to monitor. And then there is also the interaction. Hey, why are you late today? We are supposed to have breakfast every day. You're supposed to be here on time. Oh, my dad is late, and so on and so on. So there'll be some interaction with the students. Then, hey, this place is for Ali. Please don't sit in his place. He's my friend. He's his friend. So we'll take care of each other. And it gives a very strong message to our young, especially at the primary level, that there is no segregation of Malaysians. Be a Malaysian. So we sit down together, we have food together. It doesn't matter whether you're rich, you're poor, or whatever it is. You got to sit down. We got to sit down, and we have to be there at that point of time. And after we finish our food, you better clean your dishes. No matter what kind of car you come in, what kind of phone you have, you clean your dishes, get the rubbish off the table, and go to class as per plan.
Overall, I think one of the reasons why we wanted to do the headlines in education is because education always gets a lot of attention from the public. We can be talking about something entirely unrelated and everybody will say it all comes back to education. So this year in particular, the kind of initiatives and the minister himself both have been subjected to a lot of opinions. What are your thoughts on observations? I mean, have we progressed in a significant way this year in terms of improving or addressing the needs of education in our country?
I think that there's been a lot of great policy decisions this year. I wouldn't say that I disagree with many of them, if any at all. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, it's going to lie in the implementation and the effective resourcing of those policies. So on the whole, I think that from a direction perspective, looking good, actually.
Would you both agree?
Yeah. Now, in education, everyone is a stakeholder. So if I'm a minister of defense, I basically only talk to my soldiers, the caterer, and all everybody in the defense ministry. But when Dr. Masli, who is the minister of education, he's basically like the next prime minister. When he says something, everybody is involved, because they have their children, or they have their nieces, or they have a teacher, or they have someone in the education industry that they can comment on. Now, as what has been said by our friend from Teach for Malaysia, Mr. Chan, it is looking good, because the ministry is going towards student-centered policies. The student is what it's all about. But of course, like in any system, you need some time before you can actually see the results. So we are going towards there. I believe that the motion is already set in place, and we feel that it's just a matter of ironing out the nitty-gritties so that the system can go on better. Yeah.
Now, I think we mustn't forget that we are still governed by the National Education Blueprint. You know, it seems to have been forgotten, and even the new change government and new change minister has decided that he wants to keep it. And I think it's important that we must not stray away from what is contained in the blueprint, because this is good until 2025. You know, so I suppose, again, as Sun Sen says, it's implementation. So, you know, we can have great big ideas, but in the end, if it cannot be delivered at school level, then we have failed.
And looking forward to 2020, what would you like to see a bit more focus on?
Well, I would like to see the ministry do something on enhancing the English language, because we've already got the dual language program moving, but we're still stuck at 1,400 schools. Of course, Sarawak has come to save us by going full swing next year. That's over 1,000 schools going for DLP. But I think the other states have to figure out whether that's what they want or not, because especially Peninsula, I suspect we're going to be left behind if we continue to battle over language.
All right. In the OECD Executive Summary Report for the PISA 2018, under one particular section, which I'm very particularly attracted to, is about teachers' attitudes and practices. So in the report, it says that on average, across OECD countries and in 43 education systems, students who perceive greater support from teachers scored higher in reading after accounting for the socioeconomic profile of students and schools. So in this aspect, I want to see more in the ministry, especially the departments, schools, and all the institutions under the Ministry of Education, stay focused and move in one direction that is on student-centered policies, and at the same time, give autonomy, make the teachers happy, free the teachers from countless paperwork, let them concentrate on teaching their students. So if that is done, I believe that we can go very far.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the policies this year have focused on inclusion. How do we ensure that kids are in school? How do we ensure that kids are able to access the subjects that they want to access? And I think that another area that the ministry always tries to focus on but would be a great focus for next year is really thinking about what then is the quality that is going to deliver all of these policies. There is this common phrase in a McKinsey study that says that the quality quality of an education system cannot exceed the quality of our teachers. And ultimately, who is going to implement all of these policies? It's teachers on the ground. So how are we then supporting teachers to be able to effectively implement these policies? Because if I've been a teacher and I've been doing things a certain way for 20 or 30 years, it's not realistic to expect that teacher to change overnight or even in 1 year, and or even through just if you receive a circular, this is how it's going to be next year. What kind of training and ongoing support do we provide to the teachers who are actually delivering that? And I think that ultimately, if we're thinking about we want empowered students, in order to have empowered students, we need to have empowered teachers to do that. And so how do we then best support our teachers in order to raise the quality of education?
All right. We'll be following up with I think with everybody on this throughout the year, because implementation is going to be such a big focus. But in the meantime, thank you all very much for dropping by today. I've been speaking with Harry Tan, Datin Noor Azima Abdul Rahim and Chan Sun Sing today on the year 2019 in education in Malaysia. You've been listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.